Today on The Balanced Word, we pause to consider the story of Abraham.
Until we come to a point where we understand that God gave his son for us, we have no future. There's no opportunity for us at all until we can see that. And Abraham was the one who, a couple thousand years ahead of time, showed us that in a graphic way. And thus, his greatness was established.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up, my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up, my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
One of the greatest chapters in the Bible would have to tell one of the greatest stories. Well, there's no greater story than that of God and his love giving his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And that's our subject today on The Balanced Word with Dave Raw. We're going through the Bible in stories, and today's story features Abraham, who would forever be known as the one God called to offer his son Isaac. Let's join Pastor Dave in Genesis chapters 21 and 22 as he begins by introducing these greatest of chapters in the Bible.
So then we come to chapter 21 of Genesis, and Abraham, whose name, by the way, back in chapter 15 was changed to Abraham from Abram. Abram meant exalted father, and Abraham meant father of a multitude. Still didn't have a multitude. But in chapter 21, finally, Isaac is born. And it was just, now they're laughing for joy because the son that had been promised, and for poor Sarah, having that, being looked at weird by her maid, and who had a kid by Abram, and by everyone else, going, you know, yeah, look at you. Now she has that son that had been promised. And then Hagar and Ishmael split and went off the scene, went off and started drilling for oil in the Middle East. But so now it's like, this should be the happy ending. This should be like, finally, well, God made this promise back in Genesis 12, and we've had our ups and downs, but boom, we've got the kid we always wanted. It's Isaac, and he's the one that God's going to bless the world through him, and they're so excited. Until in the next chapter, Abram hears God's voice again, and God is telling him, kill the kid. Sacrifice Isaac to me. If you're Abraham, who do you tell? Do you think for a moment he's going to go tell Sarah, I got some bad news for you. By this time, Isaac's probably a young teenager. I'm going to have to go kill the kid. No, this kid is the one that fulfilled our lives. This kid is the one that the promises were made about, and it was fulfilled. And it's because we have this boy that now we're perfect. But he hears this voice from God. It's the same voice that had told him originally, get out of Ur and go to Canaan. It's the same voice that he had bargained with over Sodom. It's the same voice that throughout his life kept telling him, you and Sarah are going to have a child. He knew that voice well. He couldn't deny it. But now, in the toughest test of his life, in what would ultimately describe the greatest act of faith ever, someone who loved his son so much that he felt like that son is what completed his life was now being told to sacrifice that boy. What do you do? What would you counsel somebody to do? I mean, I had, when I was a little kid, my father was schizophrenic, as most of you know, and God once told him to sacrifice my mom, like Abraham and Isaac, and he was going to do it. He believed God. One thing you can say for crazy people, they really do what God tells them to do. It's just the trouble is they're not hearing from God most of the time. But he was ready to do it, and my mom was just praying, and something stopped him. So what do you say today to somebody that comes to you and says, I think God told me to sacrifice my kid, human sacrifice? Now, again, depending on what kind of teenager your kid is, but But you're going to immediately say, no way. If you were there then, you would go, Abraham, that can't be God talking to you. Because it contradicts everything that God is and says. That is so unbiblical. God even said way back in Genesis, if you kill somebody, you're going to be killed. We would have 100 ways to tell him, that's stupid, that's wrong, you're crazy, take a pill. So Abraham, he knew that. He couldn't tell anyone. Didn't tell Sarah, certainly. Didn't tell Isaac. He just gets his boy and says, hey, we're going to go do a sacrifice. And the kid's like, cool, up at the top of the mountain. That'll be good. That'll be fun to be with dad. Imagine what he felt like as he's walking up that hill. By the way, likely the same hill on which Jesus was later sacrificed. And as he's walking up, and then Isaac is like, hey, dad, we don't have an animal. What are we going to sacrifice? And he's going, well, God's going to himself, he's going to provide for that. Talk about a test. Talk about a difficult circumstance. I know God is telling me this, but he's taking away from me that which is most valuable to me. Now, later in Hebrews 11, I believe Paul wrote Hebrews, he explains that Abraham had so much faith that he knew that if he sacrificed him because God told him to, that God could raise him from the dead. So he had that kind of confidence. But he was ready to sacrifice him at the last second. God goes, hold it. And Abraham's like, I was hoping you'd show up. Okay, what's the deal? He goes, there's a ram over there. You know, I haven't liked them ever since they left L.A. and went to St. Louis. So go ahead and just sacrifice the ram. Sorry, it's the end of football season. Sacrifice the ram. Get your boy and go back home. And you look at it and go, who do you tell? I mean, who would you tell if you had this impression that you're supposed to sacrifice your child, and then you take them off and you're going to do it, and then God stops you at the last minute? How do you go explain that to your wife? Boy, this is a close one today. Oh, how'd the sacrifice go? Oh, it was pretty good. Well, what'd you sacrifice? Oh, a ram that had showed up lucky for Isaac. How do you explain that? Why would God do that? I can tell you right now, if God tells you to sacrifice your kid, don't do it. You are just nuts. But in this one case, he was creating a picture that nothing else could ever describe it in this way. Because someday, a couple thousand years later, God himself is going to allow his son to be nailed to a cross and sacrificed for the sins of the world. And there's only one guy that completely knows what that feels like. The father of the faith, Abraham. What would have happened if Abraham hadn't come through? Who knows? Abraham messed up plenty of other times, and God was always there and always bailed him out, but in this case, this beautiful picture of the only real sacrifice that would ever do anyone any good. God explained, you can't kill an animal and make your sins not exist. It's not about the sacrifice. It's about my son. And all of those animal sacrifices were just pictures of what he would have to do so that your sins could be forgiven. But Abraham on this day was in the right place at the right time to make history in a way that we will be talking about it millions of years from now. That guy who did that. Because every one of us, until we come to a point where we understand that God gave his son for us, we have no future. There's no opportunity for us at all until we can see that. And Abraham was the one who, a couple thousand years ahead of time, showed us that in a graphic way. And thus, his greatness was established. When you read on the next few chapters, there's still more about Abraham. Sarah died. Abraham got another wife, Keturah, had a few more kids. I mean, he's like makes Tony Randall look like nothing. But, in the end, died an old man in his 170s. But we'll always remember Genesis chapter 22. That's what, when you read Hebrews 11, after talking about, yeah, he left his home, left his family, did all this stuff, but ultimately it's, and he gave his son, his only son of the promise. And that's what he'll always be known for. So, cool story. But what do we learn from this? I think every one of us has ingrained in us somewhere the desire for greatness. And I don't mean just greatness now, greatness later, to have our life make a difference, that when it's gone, people will still remember us, that we made a difference to them, that we left a dent in the world in a way, that we impacted it. Now, we're surrounded by people who tell us we'll never be great. We have heard those voices that constantly tell us, just shut up, you don't matter, just fill your space, just do your thing, just survive. And that's the most you can hope for, and later you won't matter at all. And so for some of us, we give up on the idea of greatness, but God has destined us to have an opportunity to truly be great. When we look at the life of Abraham, we learn some things about greatness. One of the first ones is greatness and success aren't the same thing. We sometimes think that if we want to make an impact, we need to get as much stuff as we can, and we need to be as famous as we possibly can, have as many people know us as we possibly can, and somehow we will build an empire that will make us great. The more you accumulate, you know, you'll have an impact. Because the people who come after you, your kids and your grandkids, will be so anxious for you to die so they can have your stuff. Abraham wasn't a successful guy. He really wasn't. We twist these things and we think of, oh, he had these armies. No, he was a tribal warlord. He had a handful of people around him. Oh, he was rich. He had cows. Whoopee. But ultimately, if you were there in the world, nobody would ever talk about Abraham after he was gone. Because people, now they talk about Solomon. There's a guy who was successful. Abraham, not so much. Probably kind of a laughingstock because of some of his failures. But he really, if you judged his life based on what he had done by the time he died, you wouldn't call him successful. Because greatness and success are two completely different things. You can be successful and great, but you can also be great and be a great failure. I think of somebody like Mother Teresa, who undoubtedly is great because though she's gone on to be with the Lord, people will be talking about her as long as humanity survives because of her great sacrifices. And please, I know some people are going to get upset if I use a Catholic in a positive way. When you've done what she's done, then you come and lecture me about righteousness, okay? But just had to head that off, save myself some trouble at the door. But greatness and success are two different things. Now, on top of that, one of the things that we learn from Abraham is that failure does not mean you can't be great. You can fail multiple times, and the opportunity for greatness is still there. The devil loves to tell people, you blew it bad, and that failure eliminates you from ever being great. As far as God's concerned, sometimes your failure is one of the greatest keys to greatness, and it was for Abraham. See, in God's eyes, greatness does not mean you don't screw up. You don't mess up. You don't fail. In his eyes, it's something different than that. And so if Abram, who became Abraham, could end up being one of the greatest men to ever live, and he was somebody who, you know, gave up his wife a couple times, who kind of disobeyed God or obeyed him in a limited way and exhibited huge lacks of faith at certain times. And ultimately, his greatest moment was a human sacrifice. Then greatness does not mean what we think it means often. And it's not about how many good things you do. It just isn't. Now, greatness is all about impact. And greatness, ultimately, it's also not about your age. Because if you think about it, if you're going to judge Abraham when he's 99 years old, he didn't do anything that was all that great. He didn't get started really until he was 100. So for us, if greatness is defined in a way that's not like what we expect, that means that no matter how old we are, we still have opportunities for greatness. Abraham reminds us of that constantly. Our world that worships the young, that makes you think that, you know, once you if you haven't started your own company by the time you're 30, you're pretty much a failure. You better just sign up for Obamacare and hope you live long enough, and then you're done. But see, greatness is something that can come at any time. For him, it came when he was 100 years old. That's when greatness started. And he was probably like 115 when Genesis 22 happens, and he did something that depicted God's gift for mankind and his son that would resonate throughout history for all time. So don't ever think that because you failed or because you're old that your opportunities for greatness are behind you. Greatness can come through one simple event. Greatness can come through making one choice. And if you look at your life and see where you've come so far, I think you'll realize, if you reflect on it for a while, that your life has been mostly determined by a few key decisions that you've made in your life. That you made the right decision at the right time, and all kinds of good resulted from it. So also, when it comes to greatness for our lives, it's not going to be what we do, what we accomplish, how much we accumulate, how many people know us. But there may be a decision that you make or that I make this week that will be the one that opens the door to a legacy of greatness. That's the way it was for him. When he got up and he's watching his son play, he did not think, today I am going to accomplish the most incredible act of faith that there has ever been. And I don't look at this week that way. I'm just like, I'm going to try to eat really well so that when the Super Bowl comes, I can eat like I really want to eat. That's what my week looks like. I have some appointments I'm looking forward to. And, you know, but what if we looked at our life and said, this afternoon, God might put me in a position where greatness can be the result. And if we saw our decisions in that way. Now, most of us are scared to death of decisions because we have ingrained into our mind, you are always one failure away from being totally gone and washed out. And I guarantee in a room this size, there are some people who think they washed out a long time ago when they did something wrong. God doesn't look at it that way. So I don't care how much you've messed up, I'm going to put you in situations whereby greatness can be the result. Faith. Faith is believing in what most people don't believe. Faith is believing that God's going to do what he says he's going to do. Faith is stepping out and saying, I'm going to do this, even if it doesn't make sense to anyone else. This is what I'm going to do. Faith writes history. Faith creates legacy. If you are remembered after you're gone, it's going to be not because of some great thing you did. It's going to be because of some simple things that you did that had great impact. Imagine if you just share about Jesus with one person and they accept him. And that changes their life. And they go on to change other people's lives. The impact of that is amazing. Imagine if you know somebody who's like hurting and going through a tough time. And they are on the precipice, and they don't tell you this, but they're thinking, I don't even think I want to live anymore. And you're the person that steps up and is kind to them and believes in them and encourages them, and you make that kind of a difference. Imagine a child, whether it's your kid, your grandkid, or a stranger, that you just say something that makes them feel good about themselves, or you play with them for a few minutes, or, you know, I think of one of my friends here, Kelly, who raises triplets. It's like, can you imagine the potential? Now, I'm sure every day as Matt and Kelly are dealing with these three kids that came all at the same time, they aren't always thinking of greatness. They may be sometimes thinking of sacrificing them. But, but the impact that their lives have in being devoted to their kids, every time they have fun with them, what does that create in the future? And every one of us has those kinds of opportunities all around us. When you're looking at greatness ahead of time, it doesn't always look that great. I mean, ministering to, like Paul and Judd do in the prisons, to women in the prisons, that doesn't look like a great thing to do. But to when somebody goes to jail for something horrible and they end up going to heaven because somebody cared enough to come in there, that's what I call great. Because they will talk for the rest of their lives about these people who came into jail and told them there was hope. And then what do they do with their lives? How do they change? And what happens to them? See, opportunities for greatness are all around us. They just don't look like opportunities for greatness. They look stupid. They look creepy. They look like, are you kidding me? I'm going to do that? But greatness. History is written when people of faith will step out and make the right choice at the right time in a strategic way. And you can't know every, you know, there. You may open a door for someone and they just may laugh at you. You may talk to a kid and they may just think you're stupid. That's the way it happens. But you don't know what you will do that makes a contribution.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolf is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Back to finish up today's message, Pastor Dave once again.
I was talking to somebody this morning about it. I had a professor at Talbot who, Dr. Feinberg, is one of the greatest Hebrew scholars ever, and he had been the pastor of the church where he dedicated me when I was a baby. And Dr. Feinberg was kind of a strange guy, brilliant man, could recite the whole Bible in several languages. But I remember he would rebuke us in class because he said that if you have a stack of books, you should always have the Bible on top of the stack, because that's the Word of God. Now, that may sound stupid to you. You may be going, the Bible's in my phone in my pocket. Doesn't matter. But that made an impression on me. I wasn't going to let Dr. Feinberg catch me with my Bible underneath other books. That may sound superstitious to you, but I just didn't want to disappoint him. It was his father who had taught him that, who was a Jewish rabbi. So today, Dr. Feinberg's been in heaven for a long time. My Bible still goes on top of everything. If somebody comes in, and I don't make a big deal about it, but if somebody throws something on top of my Bible, I just kind of subtly pull it off because I love this book. It's so holy to me. Without Dr. Feinberg's, you know, Orthodox rabbi father, that wouldn't have been passed down. And I don't know if I would be teaching the Bible if I didn't have that kind of respect for it. So you just never know. But every one of us, every day, have potential opportunities for greatness. And if we look for those opportunities, not only will our life matter, instead of like trying to accumulate and make it matter now, our life will matter way down the road. We'll be the one who did something unusual that made an impact forever.
Next time on The Balanced Word, we'll get into Jacob's story as we continue through the Bible and stories with Dave Roth. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my